About 8 years ago, myself and Heuvel in my lab, in collaboration with Peter Lawrence at the MRC in Cambridge, England, made an antibody to the wingless protein. And with that antibody, we were able to visualize sickle transduction almost in an intact Drosophila embryo. And what they observed was that the wingless protein was present in the electron microscope in between cells, stained here with an immunogold staining, but also could be seen sometimes in what we call multivesicular bodies, uptake vesicles, that would indicate that this protein was not only being secreted from cells, but also being taken up by adjacent cells. And indeed, these multivesicular bodies could be often seen in cells that were adjacent to the cells that made the wingless RNA. So that would indicate that Wnt proteins to which the wingless protein belongs are indeed secreted molecules that are very rich in cysteines. They bind to the extracellular matrix quite strongly, and they're very rich in cysteines. But the fact that these proteins are secreted but are bound very tightly to the matrix has made it very difficult to actually work with these proteins in a biologically active form. And therefore, the identification of the curative receptor for wingless and for other Wnt proteins has been very difficult. So what I'm going to tell you now is about some experiments that we've been doing in the lab over the past couple of years, actually addressing that problem of solubilizing wingless and other Wnt proteins in Drosophila, and then to identify the receptor for wingless using biochemical and cell culture assays. And I'm also going to tell you a little bit at the end of my talk about the mutant phenotype of another Wnt protein, another Wnt gene in Drosophila. But before doing so, I want to point out that Wnt genes have now been found in many different organisms and have been associated with a wide variety of really very interesting phenotypes. About 50 Wnt genes have now been found in the mouse, and some of those, in particular Wnt1, they lead to defects in the development of the central nervous system. There's an allele of Wnt1 called swaying in which the cerebellum develops abnormally. There are 50 or so Wnt genes also found in the frog, and many of those, when you inject Wnt1 or Wnt RNA ectopically in the blastomere of the frog embryo, you get a duplication of the axis, and as you've heard a couple of times during this meeting, that implicates Wnt signaling in axis formation of the frog. Four of those genes have now been found in the fly, two of which associated with mutant phenotypes, in particular wingless and DWNT2, and I'll tell you more about those phenotypes later. And this is what you just saw from Phil Ingham's talk, that is a typical second polarity phenotype associated with wingless. But now a lot of Wnt signaling and Wnt signal transduction will now be learned in the future from studies, in particular in C. elegans, where five of those genes have now been found, including a gene called LINT44 that is associated with cell polarity phenotype in the tail of the male. But as you've heard earlier during this meeting, there are also Wnt genes implicated in the early embryonic axis formation of the worm. We've been studying wingless in particular in the fly because it has such a characteristic segment polarity phenotype. I don't have to show you all of the details of wingless signaling, but Phil Ingham did that so elegantly in the talk before. Suffice it to say that wingless is important for the maintenance and the induction of a large set of target genes. And one of the most famous of that target genes is engrailed. Wingless is expressed in a stripe of cells anterior to cells expressing engrailed, but if you remove wingless, you also remove engrailed, and it implicates wingless signaling in maintenance of engrailed function. This phenotype associated with the loss of function of wingless and the loss of function of engrailed and the loss of function of hedgehog is actually shared by a large set of other genes, identified by Janne Nieuwsluis, Vollard and Eric Wieshaus, and importantly also, I should say, by Norbert Perrimon, when he looks for genes that are contributed both by the mother and by the zygote in the Drosophila embryo. And that set of genes that all have this characteristic dental all-over phenotype and loss of polarity phenotype includes, in addition to wingless, armadillo, disheveled, pangolin, identified quite recently by Conrad Bachelor and also by Hans Klevers in Holland, porcupine, hedgehog, engrailed, and many others. And the fact that these genes have the same phenotype, of course, suggested that it would be part of a common sickle transduction pathway, and that is indeed the case. But in order to elucidate the order
of action of these genes. One other gene that has the opposite phenotype, ZEZ5-3, in which there are no denticles at all, has been very instrumental. And the combination of a large set of attestation experiments done in various different labs has now led to the outline of the genetic outline of the signal transduction pathway employed by ringlets and also employed by hedgehogs, in which the ringlets protein is secreted from cells with the assistance of the porcupine gene product. Then it would bind to a receptor, but genetically that receptor was not found. Within the target cell, the first known gene that is required for ringlet signaling is the Scheffelt. Downstream of the Scheffelt is ZEZ5-3, the protein kinase, and downstream of ZEZ5-3 is armadillo, which is the fly homolog of beta-catenin. And then it has been shown by various labs that what armadillo in fact can do is it can enter the nucleus of cells in combination with pangolin, which is a member of the TCF gene family, and then it can activate target genes including in grel, but there are many other targets that are activated by ringlets. It seems that in all of those events, all of those signaling events, that the set of signaling components, the Scheffelt ZEZ5-3, and armadillo and pangolin is instrumental. And then the engrel positive cells are signaled back to maintain ringlets expression using hedgehog. So this is all based on genetics, and that's all very well and nice, but it has to be followed up by an in vitro analysis and by chemical identification of how these things actually work. And in order to identify biochemical events associated with ringlet signaling, we've been trying to translate these events to cell culture assays. And in those cell culture assays, the identification of a cell line that we call clonate, which is derived from ring imaginal discs in the fly, has been very important for us. So a couple of years ago in the lab, Frank van Leeuwen, a student started to look at these cells and to see whether he could mimic ringlet signaling using these clonate cells. And the assays that he set up was to take yet another Drosophila cell line, Schneider cells that were transfected with the heat shock ringless construct. It appeared that those Schneider cells secrete small amounts of the ringless protein into the medium in a soluble form. When he takes then that conditioned medium and concentrates that and then incubates those clonate cells, those target cells, with that conditioned medium, he followed then the accumulation of the armadillo protein by using a Western blot analysis. And the reason that he looked at the armadillo protein is that it was known at the time that armadillo was a sort of a universal readout of ringlet signaling in the fly embryo and also in fly imaginal discs. And those assays are shown in the next slide. And they show indeed that in these clonate cells incubated with the ringlet protein, that there's a marked increase in the levels of the armadillo protein. And this is a control blot probed with an alpha catenin antibody. So in the presence of ringlets in clonate cells, there is a response in terms of an increase in the armadillo protein. We also found later that Schneider cells that we actually use to produce the ringlets protein that make substantial amounts of soluble ringlets actually themselves do not respond to ringlets because they're unable to lead to an increase in the armadillo protein. And that suggested that the Schneider cells would have some kind of a defect in signaling. And because things like the Scheffelt and ZEZ5-3 appear to function normally in these cells, we speculated at the time that Schneider cells would lack the receptor for ringlets. Now that appears to be the case, but and as everybody now is aware of, these receptors for winged proteins and ringlets in particular are now identified as members of the Frizzled gene family. The Frizzled gene was originally identified by Paul Adler studying tissue polarity and other developmental aspects of the fly and identifying a large set of genes that is important for the correct polarity of cells, for example, in the blade of the wing. One of those genes was Frizzled. When mutated, you get tissue polarity defects. The Adler lab also cloned the Frizzled genes and showed that there was a multiple transmembrane protein, 7 transmembrane domains, with, importantly, a long amino terminal extension that is rich in cysteines. Frizzled itself is interesting because it has these tissue polarity effects, but it could not be, we thought, the ringless receptor because the Frizzled gene phenotype is not similar at all to the ringless phenotype. And conversely, ringless does not have any of these tissue polarity defects that are associated with the lack of Frizzled. But a few years ago, in the lab of our collaborator, Jeremy Nathans, another member of the Frizzled gene family was cloned. that are called VFISL2, the same overall structure, and a high conservation of that amino-terminal extension. And then in the meantime, as you just heard from Phil, another member of the FISL gene family called smoothness had also been found in the fly. We were in particular interested in DFISL2 because we found that by using a northern blot analysis that the DFISL2 gene was expressed not only in fly embryos, larvae, and pupae, but it was also normally expressed in clone-age cells. And recall that these clone-age cells are able to respond to the winless protein in vitro. Schneider cells, however, cells that were unable to respond to winless, lacked expression, normal expression of the DFISL2 gene. And that led, of course, to a very simple experiment, and that is to transfect now the DFISL2 gene into the Schneider cells and to see whether the now acquired ability to respond to the winless protein. And that is indeed what happens. Again, a Western blot for the increase in the armadillo, clone-age cells respond, normal Schneider cells do not, but Schneider cells transfected with DFISL2, two different cell lines, they respond quite well now to winless protein in terms of armadillo. So that is one hallmark of a receptor, that it confers the sickle transduction ability to an added ligand. The other hallmark is, of course, binding of the ligand. Now that has been a difficult experiment to do because despite the fact that the winless protein is secreted from Schneider cells in an active form, we have not yet been able to purify substantial amount of active winless protein. So the assays that we have been doing to test for binding of winless, and also in the meantime for other wings, is now to take, again, that conditioned medium from Schneider cells producing wingless, incubated with cells that were actually transfected with frizzles, and then we co-transfect them with GFP to mark the transfected cells. These are transient transfection assays. And then we hope that the wingless protein is then able to bind to the surface of these transfected cells, and we then visualize binding by staining with that very nice anti-wingless antibody that we had made before. And those assays have worked, in fact, quite beautifully. This is a field of cells. In fact, these are human 293 cells that are transfected, but only two of the cells actually have been taken up DNA. They're labeled, therefore, by GFP. And those cells are also able, apparently, to bind winglets on the cell surface quite strongly, showing that the expression of the DFISL2 protein on the surface of these cells confers binding to the of the wingless protein. So those two assays, binding of wingless and also sickle transduction, allowed us to test a large variety of other frizzles for binding and also to do a couple of control experiments. And we found that, actually quite surprisingly, we thought initially, that not only DFISL2 is able to bind wingless quite well in these assays, but that the original frizzle that was identified by Adler, so the tissue polarity frizzle that genetically does not match with wingless sickling, is also able to bind wingless almost to the same level as DFISL2, and it also leads to an increase in the levels of armadillo. When we just remove that amino-terminal extension from the frizzled proteins, we see no binding anymore and no sickle transduction, and conversely, when we just express it outside domain, the amino-terminal extension of the frizzled on the cell surface with a GPI anchor, we get very good binding, but no sickle transduction. And that implicates that amino-terminal extension in the binding of the ligand. We also tested with the help of Marcel and Phil the smoothened gene for binding of winless, and it does not, and there's no sickle transduction either. Various mouse frizzles or human frizzles that we have tested, some of them bind and then also lead to sickling, and others do not. And when we actually compare sequence distances between these different frizzles with the capacity to bind wingless, we see that there is indeed a very nice correlation between the sequence distances between this group of frizzles, and they all bind wingless and they belong more closely to each other, whereas the mouse frizzle 6 and 3 and a worm frizzle that we have tested, Link 17 and smoothened, are more distantly related to DFISL2 and are unable to bind wingless. Presumably these frizzled family members bind other wing proteins, but at this moment we have no evidence for that. Okay, so that is the evidence that we have produced by doing these assays in vitro. I should emphasize that for the DFISL2 gene, that is still our favorite to be the wingless receptor, we now don't have genetic proof that it is required for wingless sickling. And the lack of that proof is very simple. There's no mutant for DFISL2. But fortunately,
from other corners of the animal kingdom, there's now very good genetic evidence that frizzles and wind interact with each other, in particular, again, in she elephants, where a gene product, LIN44, which is a member of the wind gene family, genetically interacts with LIN17, that has a very similar phenotype as LIN44, and LIN17 has been shown to be a member of the frizzle gene family. Additional biochemical evidence that these frizzles and winds will interact has been provided by a couple of labs, showing that in addition to the membrane-bound forms of frizzles, there are also secreted forms of frizzles that are sometimes called frisbees or frips. Those things do not have the dense membrane domains. They have a carboxythermal extension, but they are freely diffusible, and they can counteract in genitus the activity of X28, presumably by direct binding and sequestering of X28. So that shows another example of the interaction between frizzles and winds. These findings bring up a number of important questions. Let me first raise those questions before I go back to the other slide. And that is that, in particular, we are very interested in identifying how do these signal transduction molecules, how do they function? Many people assume, based on the fact that frizzles are 7 transmembrane proteins, that they would couple to G proteins, but at the moment there is no genetic or biochemical evidence that there is coupling of G proteins to these frizzles. Frizzles also contain many of them contain a PDC binding motif, a carboxythermal valine, and that suggests that they may bind directly to PDC domain proteins. And among those PDC domain proteins is the protein that we find very interesting, and that is the scaffold. Recall that it's the first known component of ringlet cyclin in the target cell. The scaffold has a PDC domain and some other diagnostic hallmarks, suggesting that it would bind directly to the carboxythermal tail of frizzles, but I should emphasize that in our hands and also in the hands of other people who have done these assays, that the scaffold does not bind directly to frizzles. So how the scaffold would couple to the frizzles downstream is presently not clear. We found, however, that the scaffold is a phosphoprotein, that it is a that the degree of phosphorylation of the scaffold varies between cells and also in embryos that are various phosphorylated forms of the scaffold. We've therefore been interested in identifying protein kinases that would be associated with the scaffold. And we found that there's one such protein kinase, and that is the protein kinase, casein kinase 2. So all of these assays that we and other labs have been producing have now led to a much better understanding of ringlet cyclin and wind cyclin in general, in which these proteins now have been shown to bind to cell surface receptor of the frizzle gene family. Within target cells, the scaffold is required. It is bound to casein kinase 2, which is a phosphoprotein. How it works, we have no idea. Then downstream of this protein kinase, ZSY3, that would then normally downregulate armadillo, but if it is inactivated by ringlet cyclin, then armadillo is not phosphorylated anymore, becomes stabilized in the target cell, and the consequence is then that the levels of armadillo protein go up. And that now seems to be the key event in ringlet cyclin and in wind cyclin in general, and that is the cytoplasmic levels of the armadillo or the beta-catenin protein. Armadillo or beta-catenin can then bind to that DNA binding protein, pancolin, the TCF or LEF1, and then enter the nucleus and lead to the activation of target genes. So that is where we stand at this moment, and it brings, of course, up many other questions. In particular, what do other frizzles and what do other winds do in Drosophila and in other systems? And in our lab, we have been, in addition to studying ringlets, been interested for a long time in the phenotype of another wind gene in the Drosophila, and that is a gene that we call DWIN2. It has the same overall structure as ringlets, although it lacks a very diagnostic insert that is found in the ringlets protein. We've made epitope tags form of the DWIN2 protein, and also we've done some of these in vitro assays similar to ringlets, and in those assays we have been able to show that the DWIN2 protein, just like ringlets, is able to bind to the DFISL2 receptor quite well and also leads to signal transduction. So the overall picture that emerges from these assays, these in vitro assays, is that there is in fact a large degree of promiscuity between binding of ligands and receptors. But in vivo,
DWIN2 and Winglets appear to function quite independently of each other because the DWIN2 gene has a very different phenotype as the Winglets protein. DWIN2 has been mutated in our lab by Karen Kosepass, a postdoc, and she found various different alleles of DWIN2, including, these are all loss of function alleles genetically, including a mutation that leads to a truncation of the DWIN2 protein because it generates a stop codon, and those alleles of the DWIN2 gene are very similar to what is known as null alleles of the Winglets gene. And I'm raising that point because based on that molecular and also some additional genetic analysis, we think that alleles of the DWIN2 gene that we have found here are in fact null alleles. And I'm making that point because the DWIN2 phenotype that we found is actually quite subtle, although it is interesting. The phenotype is twofold. The first phenotype that Karen actually found was that the DWIN2 mutant flies cannot fold their wings back on their abdomen. So they have a held-out wing phenotype. We found, and I'll show you the evidence later, that the held-out wing phenotype of the DWIN2 mutations is caused by a lack of very specific flight muscles in the thorax of these flies. The second phenotype associated with loss of DWIN2 function is male sterility, and the male sterility is due to the absence, almost, of the testis. This is a wild-type testis of the fly. It consists of the part derived from the gonads, a curled structure here, that is the testis itself in which the sperm is generated, and then there are other structures, an accessory gland, and some other ducts that are important, of course, for the transmission of the sperm. Now, in the various DWIN2 alleles that we found, all put now over a deficiency, we found that most of the male reproductive system is intact, but that the testis, that much of the testis, is in fact absent. So all of this here shows you the normal constitution of the male reproductive tract, but the absence of the testis. Now, in more detail, what Karen found was that what's going wrong in these male testes in DWIN2 mutant is that normally the testes is surrounded by a specific layer of muscles. And those muscles can be stained in the fly by using a muscle-specific enhancer trap or using an anti-muscle myosin stain. So this is a wild-type testes, and you can see this muscle cell surrounding the testes and also giving the testes its shape and structure. In the DWIN2 mutant, we can find early on a testes, but it is not marked with these muscle cells, either using that enhancer trap or using the anti-muscle myosin stain. Now that is very interesting. It is a specific phenotype in the muscles that normally surround the testes. Karen also analyzed where these muscles were actually coming from, and in doing so, we have to explain to you a little bit about the formation of the male reproductive tract in the fly. The male reproductive tract is derived from two structures in the fly embryo and in the larvae. First of all, the gonads, and then second of all, there is a specific imaginal disc, the genital disc. Those two structures are sitting initially far apart in the embryo and in the larvae, but during the pupal development of the fly, the genital disc elongates, and so do the gonads, and then they grow to each other, and they form a junction. And it is through that junction that the sperm actually then comes out of the gonad and then enters the duct system here. So these things have to grow to each other. Now the growth of these structures is normal in the DWIN2 flies, but what actually seems to be going wrong is that the formation of those muscle cells. Now interestingly, it was found by Karen that these muscle cells that are going to end up on the gonad do not originate from the gonad itself, but they originate from the other structure, from the genital disc. So early in development, you can see the genital disc here that is covered with these muscle cells, as stained here with this muscle-specific enhancer trap. Now, when these cells, when the two structures start to make contact with each other, you can see that these muscle cells now start to enter the gonad, and then after the contact has been fully established, you see that these muscle cells have now covered almost all of the gonad. So these muscle cells do not come from the gonad itself, they come from the genital disc, and it is specifically, as Karen found, that migration of those muscle cells that is defunct in the DWIN2 mutants. That correlates quite well with the expression of the DWIN2 gene. It is expressed both, in fact, in the gonad, in the base of the gonad, and in the tip of the genital disc. So it seems actually to provide a signal now for the migration of these muscle cells. Where the signal has been made, where it has to come from at this moment, we don't understand, because the BWIN2 gene is expressed both in the structure that gives rise to the muscle cells, both, so to speak, and in the structure to which these muscle cells have to migrate to. Okay, so that is one specific muscle phenotype. That other phenotype that I talked about, the held-out wing phenotype in these flies, also is a defect in a specific subset of muscles. It appears that in the thorax of the fly, that there's a whole set of specific flight muscles that have been numbered, and it is a particular one specific flight muscle called muscle number 52 that is absent in the DWIN2 mutant. So many of the other flight muscles are normally made, but it is in particular the muscle number 52 that we cannot find in the DWIN2 mutant. Again, that is an interesting phenotype that may correlate with DWIN2 being required for either the migration or the attachment of these muscles. Let me then also point out where these muscles are coming from in the fly. They come from specific myoblasts that are specified quite early in development, that are attached to the imaginal discs, in this case to the wing imaginal disc. And when the wing imaginal disc grows out to give rise to the wing and also to the thorax, these muscle cells that grow and they fuse, and then they form all these muscles that are then attached to specific sites in the cuticle that is then derived from the imaginal disc. Again, we thought, would there be a correlation between the expression of this wing gene, DWIN2, and the absence of these flight muscles? And we think that there is. This is the normal expression pattern of the DWIN2 gene in the wing imaginal disc. It is expressed quite abundantly at the AP boundary and also at the dorsal ventral boundary, although there is no consequence apparently of that expression, because in the DWIN2 mutants we don't see any defects in the differentiation of cells that are actually coming from these boundaries. However, there's also a low level of expression in another area of the imaginal disc that is called the ventral pleura, that is enlarged, seen here. And that ventral pleura is one site to which these muscles that are absent in the DWIN2 mutant are actually going to be connected to. Okay, so there's a correlation between the expression of this gene and the phenotype. One very nice experiment that you can do in the fly is then also ask what are the consequences now of ectopic expression of such a gene. And we used, therefore, the GAL4 UAS system that was described earlier during this meeting. In this case, using a particular GAL4 driver called 71B, that would then give rise to ectopic expression of the DWIN2 gene. And when we do those experiments, we found very similar phenotypes, in fact, as the loss of function phenotype of DWIN2. The phenotype is very hard to discern, but in fact, many of the flight vessels are disrupted in when we overexpress the DWIN2 gene. So both loss of function of DWIN2 or misexpression of DWIN2 leads to a misguidance or to a misattachment of specific flight muscles in the thorax of Drosophila. So we're very interested in the phenotype because it is very subtle, but it also allows a detailed genetic analysis of the signal transduction pathway that is used by the DWIN2 gene, and we hope to identify other components of wind signaling using this specific phenotype. So this is the overall our interpretation of these findings. There's normally local expression of DWIN2 that is then important for the guidance and the attachment of these muscles, but when we either remove DWIN2 genetically or misexpress it, we get misguidance of these muscles. So this work that I described has been done in the lab by a couple of people. We have been doing genetic analysis of Wingler signaling has been done by Ken Kanekin and Sofia Lopez da Silva. All this work on DWIN2 has been done by Karen Kosefas. The earlier work that I described on Wingler signaling in vitro was done by Carl Willers, Andreas Wodarts, Cindy Harriman-Shamers, and Marcel Brink. And we've been collaborating on the analysis of DWIN2 with Jeremy Nathans in HSMI, John Hopkins. Thank you for your attention.